Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Washington AI Network podcast. This week's conversation took place the day before that White House Correspondents' Dinner. At our third annual TG AI Friday event, I sat down with Meta President and Vice Chair Dina Powell McCormick and Meta Chief Technology Officer Andrew Bosworth to talk about how Meta is positioning AI as a democratization force and not just a productivity tool, and why small businesses are a critical battleground for AI adoption. A special thanks to Meta for partnering on this event, where guests also got to play with the Meta AI glasses and see what all the hype is about. Have a listen.
Okay, Dina, I have to start with you. You were at Goldman Sachs for 16 years. Were a member of the management committee when you ran the firm's sovereign wealth business. Then you were vice chairman of BDT MSD, and you served in the first Trump administration as deputy national security advisor working on the foundations that led to the Abrams Accords. Thank you so much for that. Game changing. Now, you're president and vice chair of Meta. Where do you start? You've done so many things.
Well, thank you, Tammy. This is so special for all of us at Meta. All of my colleagues that are here, they don't often come to DC.
Yep.
And so Joel Kaplan and I promised that we would be able to bring them here to honor journalism and to give them a really good time. It's such a big deal to have Boz with us today. He
yes.
is one of the founders of so many of the most important products at Meta. And I just want to say that Don Overton is one of the most important inspirations
yes,
to this company.
Is.
And we are so honored to know you, to work with you. Thank you and your amazing wife.
Thank
again.
You, Don.
Well, I had been on the board for a year, actually, at Meta. And you learn a lot when you're on a board of a company. And different CEOs and founders do it differently. I was always so struck by how much Mark would start every board meeting with, here are all the challenges, here's the things that I think I may be failing at, and then he would be solicitous enough to actually ask the board, what do you think? And like real decisions were made in that boardroom, which I think sometimes can be unusual. And so when he asked me last December if I would take on this role, I was super excited because I knew how amazing this platform is. It's the last founder of the Magnificent Seven. Mark is the last one. And yet the top 20, 25 people like Boz have been there 20 years plus or 16 years plus. So you have this mix of an innovator with a stable leadership team, a pretty remarkable balance sheet, and almost 4 billion people every day on the platform between WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, Messenger, etc. But the real thing, Tammy, that I was so excited about was the very unique AI vision that Mark and Meta have, which is that it's about people, not products. That in this moment that we are witnessing, which is the transformation of humanity, we actually are a company that's been connecting humans for a long time, and we believe that super intelligence will only make people better, will help them reach their potential, whether it's Don or creators or musicians or small business owners. And so I'm so excited that this is a very unique mission in today's world. There's a lot of talk about what's happening with AI, and our belief is that it will empower human beings.
Well, I'm going to come back to you on small business, but Boz, you're running one of the biggest R&D operations on the planet. Yeah, look at him, just shaking his head like just another day. I mean, come on. What you're doing with Reality Labs has literally changed how everyone is functioning and how they're communicating. But with AI now, if I may, can you tell us how is this changing things and why should Washington care?
I think before this year, we were still on a very kind of a progressive path, a technology getting better over time, but kind of at the rate that we had become used to technology getting better, which is pretty rapidly by like historic human standards, but still like, okay, this thing's a little better, this thing's a little faster, this is a slightly new interface to the same app that I was already using. We've always thought in Reality Labs that there was this platform shift that had to happen. Phones are unbelievable. They're the greatest device we've ever invented as a species. They also do have limitations, and they haven't materially changed in 6 or 8 years. The phone you have in your pocket now is the same one you had in your pocket 6 years ago, more or less. And we start to run into the limitations as a creative technologist. You start to run into the limitations of those platforms, what it can't do. We thought that the sequence of events would happen: virtual reality, augmented reality, and AI. kind of in that order. And to some degree, that's because virtual reality and augmented reality are physics problems. They're hard problems, legitimately challenging problems, but you can kind of attack them. Artificial intelligence was this very nonlinear problem. Nobody had a construct of how it was going to break out into a level of intelligence that was really groundbreaking for people. Yeah, we've been using autocorrect, but it's a pretty big jump from autocorrect to what we're using today.
Yeah.
And I would say even the models that we were here, our own Silicon Valley types, talking to you about a year ago or 2 years ago, were still like really impressive. They did a lot of cool stuff. They deserved your attention, but it didn't yet feel like we'd crossed a major threshold. What I will say is now, today, in my career, and I've always tried to be a student of history, especially the research labs that came before us, Xerox PARC and Bell Labs, I've never seen a discontinuous change in technology the way that I've seen in the last year. January 1st of this year, the overwhelming majority, 99% of code at Meta, written by tens of thousands of engineers, was written the old-fashioned way, we would call it, by hand. Today, I doubt 1% of code at Meta is written by humans the old-fashioned way. So
1%.
I'm referring to January 1st as the old times in this analogy. It's a discontinuous change. It's tremendously empowering to individuals. People who don't have computer science degrees can now execute software that was previously impossible for them to execute without going and hiring a very expensive person with such a degree. So it's very disruptive to my own industry. It's very disruptive to my own tribe, so to speak. But the empowerment that it offers to every individual, we've never seen anything like it. And so if you go back to Facebook's initial mission, which is to give people the power to make the world more open and connected, most of our history has been known for that last word, the connectedness word. I think the giving people the power part is the part that we are kind of tapping into now.
Amazing. All right, Dean, you and I worked with Kevin Sheek. He was here today. It's his birthday coming up. Everyone want to give him a round of applause. On the 10,000 Small Business Program, Mayor Bloomberg was the co-chair. I'm not going to go through all of these programs, but you have an entire history. What are you doing with small business? You've already had this information in government, in private. What's your plan?
Well, we're going to hear a little bit more about that with some small business owners that are using Meta AI, but they're going to be introduced by some very special people. I just want to recognize them. My favorite senator from Pennsylvania, Senator John Fetterman, is here. The senior senator. My other favorite senator, Bernie Moreno, is here. Thank you so much, Senator Moreno. We have a big investment in Ohio that he is going to talk about. We have the Deputy White House Chief of Staff, James Blair, is here, who is prioritizing small businesses very, very sincerely, and we're seeing a huge impact on that. And Administrator Ed Forst, where is he? Okay, he's the head of the GSA. He's in charge of some easy things like the White House ballroom. But we're really glad that you're here. I'll take a step back and tell you our kind of thinking around what's happening with small businesses and AI. When you really think about what it takes to fuel, especially the American AI revolution, it's capital, it's energy, and it's people, talent. Some estimates believe that the U.S. will need $10 trillion of capital in order to achieve compute goals, 250 gigawatts of power, and millions of new roles. Just in the next 2 years, the U.S. will need 500,000 new electricians. So just think about that. And the people, sadly, that we see today, and I was talking with Secretary Bessent the other day, are small business owners. Only 20% of American small business owners are using AI. That is a large percentage that is not. Margaret Spelling should do a report on this because she helped us build 10,000 small businesses, so she knows what we're talking about. The 20% that do use AI increase their revenue dramatically and their market share. They are not laying off people. They are creating new jobs. And so one huge mission that we have, especially since we have 200 million small business owners on the platform, is to make sure that they're AI literate, to be advocates for that, obviously, to proudly engage our tools on that. And we have four small business owners, I hope you saw their booths today, that are using Meta AI in transformative ways. And I am worried, Tammy, I think there's two big groups in America that aren't using AI being left behind. Women, broadly, shockingly low numbers of using AI, and small business owners. So we're really hoping to change that.
Well, let's hope so, because small business drives America, and I'm not Kelly Loeffler. I'm just going to say that. Anyway, all right, Boz. So Dean has got this big plan, and you've got all the big technology, right?
And the money. He has
and
the money.
Oh, he's got all the coin. I like that. When we talk about the Meta AI glasses, if you call it the first hardware category to be completely defined by AI from the beginning, What does AI actually do on the glasses that my phone can't?
The major advantage of having the glasses is they're ever-present in your life. So if you think about the use cases that you're using AI, when you're taking something out of your pocket, this will sound trivial. Taking a thing out of your pocket is actually a meaningful impediment to you engaging with the technology. Ideally, you wouldn't have to do it. When we started with the glasses, it was before AI really broke through. As a consequence, the glasses were initially a way that you thought of, hey, as a parent, I can watch my kid do something and have a photo of it without having to see the event through my phone. And a parent will recognize that. AI hit us, and we realized right away that we were really underselling the value proposition of this hardware. To have it be in your life, ever-present, on your face, readily available, just as quickly as you can speak, to be ready and available, that was a huge breakthrough for us. Now, there's really profound use cases. You saw one earlier with the blind and low vision community. That's not the only one, not even the only one affecting veterans. If you look about people who have injuries from IEDs, they often suffer from memory deficiency. There's an organization called Oscar Mike that we work with, similar to how we work here, to do co-work to make sure that people who have memory issues can use the glasses to remember things they go about during their day. And as AI starts to be able to be kind of always watching, the AI is aware of what's happening around it, it can help these people remember, did they take their medication or not? Which is a thing that they struggle with, which has life-altering consequences if they get it wrong. So I think the ability for the glasses to be in your life without you having to take any extra steps is the long-term promise of it. There are a lot of leaps we have to make between now and then, some of them technological. Right now, the battery life is challenged the longer the camera or the microphone or the speakers are active. So we've got to make some leaps forward technologically in them. The AI models, we want to do as much of that processing locally on your phone as we can to keep it private. Some of those things have to go to the server to be processed intelligently. How do we do those things? So there's real questions to answer, both technology and policy. But the vision that we have is for each individual, no matter what their innate ability in terms of memory, in terms of vision, in terms of hearing, by the way, they're tremendously useful tools as well for people who have hearing loss. These are just the beginning of giving humans a huge amount of uplift in the power that they have access to. And if you have to go to your phone for it, you just don't use it. If you have to give the AI models the context of the problem you're solving, you're probably not going to. But if it's in the flow of how you're living your life, then it's profound. And it's not just glasses, by the way. There's lots of ways that we can engage people with this technology on their wrist, on jewelry. There's lots of different ways that we're imagining people can gain access to the superpowers that AI offers each individual who uses it.
Boz, I interviewed the CTO, well, I don't want to say, one of the military services and Veterans Affairs, and they both say that this technology is going to change things for the warfighter, more safety. So thank you again for jumping into the Army and being part of the service. Thank you for that. Dina, I got to talk to you about energy. I know we're short on time because everything he needs is energy.
So I have the money.
This
she has the power.
Relationship works, right? You have the super intelligence. You have the superpower. How are you guys going to do this?
Well, it is daunting. And obviously, so many people in this room are on the forefront of it. Where's Mike Gallagher and Palantir? Absolutely crushing it. Where's Speaker Paul Ryan, who's investing in some of the most important technologies in this space? I mean, we haven't even gotten into how much this is going to change, obviously, our national security, our military readiness. I see Jennifer Griffin. She does stories on this all the time. I think this is critical. I mean, America has to win in this, and we have to work with our allies to do so. And energy is at the core of it. I think we've seen, especially over the last few years, that energy dominance is national security. We are trying very hard to invest wisely in the country for the infrastructure and the compute that's needed. And I actually think that right now, one of the things that's happening as you see conflicts around the world is that people and countries are realizing we better really take care of our own energy needs. We better think about the newest technologies, new sources of energies. I don't think in 10 years you will see any major country reliant on oil or energy or wind or solar that is not outside their country. I think you're going to see so much of it invested in-house, or you can't meet the AI ambitions that are necessary or the national security ambitions that are necessary.
Mike Allen is tweeting what you just said right now. He's getting the word out. That's for sure. All right, one final question for both of you. It's America's 250th anniversary. We have all these movers and shakers here that have so much impact and can have so much more. What would you both like to see them do?
I'd like to see a little more optimism. A lot of the Silicon Valley, I know it's easy to be a parody of ourselves, but like fundamentally, we are trying to give tools to people with the belief that on net, those people are going to do great things with those tools. And we're occupied primarily with what is possible when you give those kind of rich sets of capabilities to people. I come from a family of small business owners. I grew up on a horse ranch in a small vineyard in California. And for the most part, we're trying to decide, do we need to hire somebody else to help us run the marketing? Or do we just, you know, try to do what we can? Like, there's not enough hours in the day if you're running a small farm to do these things. And farmers are naturally entrepreneurial, right? We got a horse farm, that means we sell manure. Everything that's an output is an opportunity to make a business. I want to give everybody those tools. We got to make it safe. We got to do the work to protect people from the downsides, from the risks. But so often the entire conversation is the risk conversation. And that's all you hear anyone talking about, you know, in policy circles, in the press. That's all you hear are the risk conversations. And I just think we're missing a tremendous opportunity to help people and empower people, our fellow Americans, people around the world, to help themselves. And we don't always see that for the conversation that we have.
Thank you. That is very powerful.
Dina? I just want to kind of echo a little bit of what Boz just said. I mean, to see Don Overton and his love and belief for this country, that he served so honorably, and now he wants to continue serving and being a champion for other veterans. To see the small business owners whose lives are changing because they don't have to waste so much time on just the mechanics of running a small business and can actually pursue their passions. We launched a brand new program with Senator Moreno to train fiber technicians, which is one of the most important jobs needed on an infrastructure site. We have a program in Ohio. People go through it in 4 weeks. They become licensed as a fiber technician, and they are guaranteed a job at a Meta site. And there are millions of needs for not just fiber technicians, but as I said, electricians and others. And to me, when I think about this as the 250-year anniversary of America, I think of the other times that our country has come together, whether that was the Industrial Revolution or whether that was World War II, when America came together to fight against tyranny. And I actually think it's one of those moments. And you can only be hopeful because we live in America, and we can only be optimistic about what it means to build America's workforce, which is what we are really doing and so proud to do. And what everyone in this room can do is, I think, what Boz said, which is just kind of bet on America, because I really do believe that is what is needed right now from so many citizens in this country.
Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.